What's up, everybody? It's Mike Dussault, Evan Lazar, and we are here from Indianapolis at the 2024 Scouting Combine, officially launching a brand new podcast here for Patriots.com. It's called Patriots Draft Countdown, and it's presented by Bud Light. Easy to drink, easy to enjoy. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the New England Patriots. And we're going to be bringing these podcasts throughout the spring to you guys, really just focusing on the draft. And of course, what better place to kick it off than here in Indianapolis? So we've had a good 2 days so far. We're going to use these podcasts to go a little bit more in depth, a little bit more free-flowing conversation. We're also going to welcome some guests today. We're excited. We got Jordan Reed coming by to provide his insight from ESPN about the Patriots draft picks, what they might do at third overall. Evan, we've been here 2 days so far. What have you taken away? I mean, for me, it's that we've gotten to talk to Elliot Wolf and Jerob Mayo. I feel like we're in uncharted territory here.
I know. The whole combine is different for us now, Deuce, because this is the way our life is now. Can you believe this is our life? I think the biggest thing that I take away from both their remarks is that they do seem like they are on the same page about things, which is what you want to see. I think they have prioritized building through the draft, yeah. And the big word that we heard from Jerob Mayo this morning was sustainability. And frankly, we saw it in 2021 where they had one good year with that big free agency spending spree, draft the first round quarterback, and they get to the playoffs, 10 wins in 2021. But then what happened in 22-23, right? And that's the way it happens in free agency. It's not a way to build a sustainable winner. I think Bill Belichick knew that. I'm not trying to say that he didn't, but I also think that Jerob Mayo and Elliot Wolf recognize that as well. So some of the takeaways, I understand a lot of Patriots fans would love to see that big splash free agency signing on day one on March 11th, but I think there is a chance that it's a little bit more methodical. And Mayo did say he doesn't want to sit here and say they're not going to be competitive, but he's not promising championships or anything at this point either. So I think they know that this is going to be a little bit of a rebuild here.
Yeah, they've got to find their own way. I mean, it was really cool just to get to talk to Elliot Wolf. I mean, we've talked to Jerob plenty of times, but you know, really everything you said, and I mean, we talk so much on the radio show. We do that podcast, Patriots Unfiltered, and you know, so much of it has been, in my perspective, directed toward the draft and the misfires in the draft. And you know, that's how you kind of get to this place where the offense kind of lacks talent. You know, you had a good defense. You know, you're able, and even with injuries, you're still able to, you know, pull out a good performance. But it's a question of how can they get the offense back to that level. And I mean, Elliot Wolf coming from Green Bay, obviously they have a long history of being a very successful franchise. You know, they've had the quarterbacks. That's the biggest piece. We know that. But that model of draft, develop, retain, it's just something that has been so missing recently. And I think, like you said, they have an opportunity with Christian Barmore. You know, let's get out ahead of the curve and not wait till we get to the spring when these guys are about to hit free agency. The NFL is awaiting. You know, they're waiting to get money thrown at them. You got to move early on these guys. And I mean, I think it would be a really good first step, as much as we want to talk about, hey, let's make big free agency splash, which I still think that they could do. Let's take care of our own guys first. Send a message to the locker room that if you come here, you improve, you do things the right way, we're going to keep you around and build around you.
I think that's a great way of putting it. I think you're looking at Kyle Duggar and Mike Onwenu as two people that not only are great football players for this team, but also can send a message that this is what we're about now. We're going to draft you. We're going to develop you for 4 years. And when you turn into the stud players that those two guys are, we're going to take care of you and extend you and keep you here long term. That's the way that a lot of the best teams in the league have done it. And I understand that, like we keep saying, that the splashes are fun and it's great content for us to talk in March, you know, about all the big names that they've signed. But ultimately, it's going to come down to the draft. We both know that. We both feel that way. And I think that's where the focus of this group is. And now I think it just comes, it determines who in the draft is the big step next. But obviously, I think that the messaging is strong. Whether or not they go out and execute it, we'll see in the fall. But the messaging is strong.
I mean, you look at some of the positions in 2021. I mean, not that we're, you know, rehashing everything here on Patriots Draft Countdown. But I do think that you look at, like, you know, Hunter Henry. They didn't develop a tight end. Matthew Judon. They hadn't really been able to develop an outside linebacker who can make a three-down impact. And, you know, Jonnu Smith, you're kind of almost a prisoner to what the free agency class had to offer for your needs. So I think if you're able to be a little bit patient and say, look, you know, we're not going to go out and give somebody who's not quite the perfect fit, but we don't have anybody, let's play the younger guys. And I think, you know, Perillo, that he's on board with that. We've seen a lot of that over the last couple of years. So hopefully these guys that we'll, of course, get into here in a second, that these guys can be those guys. And even though we're talking about defensive line and linebackers here on day one, that these are still players that can come in and develop and really have a chance to be a part of the fabric of this new generation of Patriots.
Look, absolutely. And I asked Jerob Mayo this morning about the comment that Elliot Wolf made saying that they are going to play younger players than the past regime did. And we just mentioned on the debrief, I think Lawrence Guy, you know, those types of guys, no pun intended, Adrian Phillips, good football players, really good football players for this team. But ultimately, a guy like Marty Mapu deserves those opportunities. A guy like Sam Roberts, or, you know, obviously Christian Barmore is going to be a big part of things moving forward. Those guys deserve some opportunities to play a little bit more, and then we can also talk about the guys in the draft that they might take. And I think that's where those opportunities are going to come from, is that some of these older guys are going to be phased out a little bit, and some of these younger players are going to get time to get in-game reps and develop. And I think that's a good thing for the Patriots moving forward. It might have some growing pains. It's going to be a little bit, you know, they're not going to be as sound and schematically, fundamentally, all that type of stuff right out of the gate. But you're looking for that ceiling. You're looking for those guys to be a little bit better than the guys that they're replacing.
Let's just talk for a second about the Patriots' current roster. And we broke down, like, the defensive line, like, all their contracts are up next year. So, I mean, they have long-term needs along the defensive line. But we also have the linebacker position, which, you know, you have Juwan Bentley, captain. I mean, really a tone setter for this team. Jelani Tavai coming off an excellent year.
Yeah.
You know, singing his praises yesterday. You know, just they've got I'm thinking of the third linebacker who got hurt the last couple of years. They still have managed to keep around. I'm blanking. Raekwon McMillan is another one that, you know, continues to be on the roster. That's
Mac
why you forget
Wilson
about him.
Too.
He hasn't really played. Mac Wilson could be back, who also – you know, showed something when they moved him more to like an edge pass rushing kind of a role. So I guess, Evan, first question, just to kind of kick this off, and I know you hate the defense, but I should answer my own question. No, yeah. but from your perspective, you know, what do you see kind of the needs here in the front seven?
I look at edge defender as probably the biggest one, because I do think they have enough bodies in the interior defensive line. And that's one area, too, where this free agency class is extremely deep. It's deep at the edge rushers as well, but not only just with guys that are top of the free agency class at that position, but even these, like, fill-in guys that we're talking about that just can be rotational pieces to come in and play, you know, 20 snaps a game if they have to. So I look at edge defender as a spot. First of all, you got to be able to rush the passer. Like, that's the biggest thing in the game nowadays, in my opinion, maybe even more so than the coverage side of things, is being able to pressure these quarterbacks. Because if you go up against all these all-world quarterbacks that are around the NFL in your division, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers coming back to the Jets, Tua, if you go up against those guys and they got all day to throw back there, then it's going to be a long day at the office. So I look at edge defender also because of their needs in free agency and their holes in free agency. Look, if Josh Uche and Anfernee Jennings are not on this team next year, who is going to step up and do those roles and play those snaps?
You just need bodies at the least, right?
So I do think that is a need, and I think it's something that they are going to have to address. But I honestly like the free agency class a little bit in that respect, too. But this draft definitely has some guys that are intriguing.
That's one position that I would say I can get on board with about free agency is edge rusher. And you know what you're getting. They've had success
Brian Burns,
with Judon.
Josh Allen, I mean, even guys a little bit further down. Yeah.
Go right down the list. And, I mean, all those guys, you know, can do it all. So, I mean, it certainly seems like a position, too, that it takes a little time to develop there.
Yeah.
You're probably not, especially with the Patriots' needs, you're not going to draft an edge in the first couple rounds and have him come in. You're probably drafting offense anyway, but if you know, by the time the Patriots are ready to pick these guys, they're not going to be, you know, the type of players that are going to come in immediately. But let's talk a little bit just about the guys that they're not going to draft. The top of the draft, you know, the Dallas Turners of the world, the Latus of the world, those kind of guys.
Yeah, so Dallas Turner, look, he's a really talented player. He's probably the best defensive prospect in this draft. With that being said, that means he's probably the eighth or ninth best player in this draft, because all the guys at the top are, luckily for the Patriots, are all offensive players. But you look at him as more of this well-rounded player that can pretty much do anything on a football field from an edge rusher standpoint. But you obviously look at the production, the pass rush ability, and that's a big thing. So I look at him as somebody that, in the traditional Belichick way of doing things, would have been somebody that we would have had to hammer, right? Like, this is definitely a guy that they might go after. Now with Jerod Mayo and Elliot Wolf a little bit too, but mostly Jerod Mayo saying quarterback, receiver, tackle, quarterback, receiver, tackle. It's harder to imagine, but I really, you know, there's nothing to dislike about Dallas Turner's game. He's a well-rounded player.
It's just funny, like, having done a few, this is my fourth combine now, all the Alabama guys are the same. Like, you just look at them, they're all, like, very serious, like, polished, like, you just think they all just kind of emit the same kind of, like, this guy is a serious football player. Those are the kind of guys I love. One guy I just wanted to bring up, you saw him down at the Senior Bowl, got to see him today, Darius Robinson from Missouri, who is just an absolute square. I mean, he just has shoulders for days. So he's, you know, he's one guy that, you know, end of day one, early day two, probably going to go in there. But I look at him and I say, that's the kind of player the Patriots could have a lot of fun with. They could move him around a lot, and he could make an impact maybe from a number of different spots.
Probably helped his stock the most out of anybody in this edge rusher group. Look, everybody knows Latu can play. He was down there, too, in Mobile. He's a little bit lighter, though, UCLA, a little bit lighter. You know, not exactly that prototypical Patriots sturdy edge defender. But I think, you know, some of these guys that we saw at the Senior Bowl, he probably helped his stock the most.
Yeah.
And I think that the biggest thing is, you mentioned, when you get into an NFL setting like the Senior Bowl, and there were some really good tackles down there, by the way, some guys that are going to be top 50 picks, and we're going to talk about them later in the week. When you get down to the Senior Bowl, can you handle NFL power and play strength? Can you hold up at the point of attack? Are you able to really take on a different weight class? And I don't mean that literally. I just mean it, you know, in general. Like, it's a different level of power, speed, physicality to the game when you start to go up against guys that are going to be drafted in the first and second round of the draft at tackle. So I thought he stood out the most out of anybody.
Another school to talk about, Michigan. The Patriots, no stranger, drafting Michigan guys. Uche, clearly, Chase Winovich going back. Tom Brady. We're staying on defense, side of the ball. But Jalen Harrell.
Little guy named Tom Brady. You know.
Jalen Harrell, I mean, this is an outstanding team. I mean, they won the national championship, you guys know. So, but Jalen Harrell, another kind of guy that, you know, Chris Jenkins. They've got some really good players up front.
Always.
I don't know. They're probably out of the Patriots' range. Certainly Jenkins will probably be. But those guys continue to pump out solid defensive players.
Look, you can go on the line of scrimmage at Michigan, offense or defensive line, and you will be
NFL,
just fine.
NFL.
Is like that's Michigan, Georgia, Bama. They just have NFL guys all over the line of scrimmage.
It's good stuff. Chris Braswell, another guy that we talked about a little bit, another one of those Alabama guys. They're all kind of the same. You know, but I find myself, Evan, when I'm watching these guys, and, you know, certainly – there's, you know, some of them you're just like, this guy is a two-gapper. He's wide, he's big, and then you'll see other guys who are smaller and they're up the field kind of types. And, you know, we've been talking a little bit here in Indy about Christian Barmore, who you know, wasn't necessarily a Patriots fit when the Patriots traded up to get him. I don't think, you know, in a traditional sense, when you look at what they usually look for, it wasn't really him. But again, with a new regime and maybe a new twist coming to the defense, we heard Elliot Wolf say yesterday, we need to get faster on defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Mayo was then kind of followed up with that. I think Phil Perry asked, you know, did you feel that this year? And, you know, Mayo kind of danced around the question a little bit. But I thought that was really interesting. Just, you know, we know what this defense is. It's two, you know, a couple space eaters in the middle and then bigger guys on that with length on the outside and, you know, kind of inside as well with you know, guys like Bentley, a little bit like 6'2", 240. Like, that big. You're not looking at like the 6'1", 220 type linebacker guys. So that's my big question here as we're kind of looking at some of these guys is, you know, are we still kind of operating under the same system or is everything kind of on the table? Are we trying to get fast on the defensive line as well and get more guys like Barmore who can get upfield and get after the quarterback?
Well, I think it's twofold because, one, you got to be able to chase the quarterback because all these quarterbacks that you're going to go up against are mobile. So you have to be able to chase the quarterback around. So if you have all these plotters out on the field, you know, your traditional 3-4 ends and big you know, linebackers like a Juwan Bentley, those guys have a role and they're good at their roles and I'm not trying to kill them for it. But at the same time, when you're in space with Lamar Jackson and that's who you have running around to chase him, that's not going to end well for you. So you have to get faster, I think, in some respects in that way. And the second thing is it is really, really difficult in this league now to sit in man-to-man coverage. And if you have to play more zone, then you have to have more range at the second level of the defense. You have to have that ability to drop guys off the line of scrimmage and run those simulated pressures, things like that. You can't play man-to-man against all the receiver talent in the league for four quarters. It's still a man-to-man league at the end of the day. I feel like fourth quarter game on the line, it's you versus me. Like, that's just the way that any sport's going to be. But in terms of actually going and surviving a four quarters against Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs and all, you know, Dalton Kincaid and all those playmakers are down in Miami, all those playmakers, you have to be able to incorporate zone. And that means being a little bit more rangy and instinctive in coverage at the second level of the defense.
Just a few more names to throw at you guys. We were all waiting for T'Vondre Sweat. I mean, you saw him down at the Senior Bowl. Massive, massive human being.
Huge.
Certainly would fit in the middle of just about any defense.
Yeah.
We're not sure what happened. I'm sure that something will come out of what's going on with him. But McKinley Jackson was a guy that I kind of had circled before getting here, listening to him, two-time captain, one of those interior space-eater type guys. When you look at Lawrence Guy departing, he's the kind of fit. I mean, you mentioned Fiske earlier.
I love Fiske. Big, tough,
gritty interior guys. You know, sometimes you hear these guys talk and you're just like, this guy's going to be a player. You know, and maybe you were wrong. Maybe your instincts are wrong. But oftentimes, I think you kind of get a feel for some of these guys that are really going to elevate once they get to the NFL.
That's how I feel about Fiske, is that he's just a football player.
Yeah.
Is he going to look great in the drills tomorrow? And is he going to put on a show at the 40-yard dash and all that kind of stuff? No, probably not. But when you turn on the tape, he's so noticeable all the time. He's just everywhere, getting in the backfield. He's more of an upfield player, though. That's what we were just talking about. Not necessarily going to be like that two-gapper, hold a point of attack type of guy. He's going to want to get vertical and get up the field. But at the Senior Bowl, on Florida State film, he just gets after it. I mean, the highest motor out of any of these guys, I think, in the draft. At great handwork, great technique, fundamentals, leverage, pad level, all that kind of stuff. So he's one of those guys that's going to go somewhere on day two, maybe early day three, probably day two, that isn't going to wow anybody here, isn't going to be like this impressive athlete. And then you're going to look up in a couple of years, and he's just going to be a really good NFL player.
Yeah, some NFL quarterbacks not looking forward to him entering the league, I'm sure. But here in Indy, the great part is we get everybody's here, the media and everyone. So I had an opportunity to sit down with Jordan Reed from ESPN to provide his insight. I mean, he's like the new Mel Kiper. We had him last year, too. It's a developing relationship, so we're excited to have Jordan back on, and he gave us some insight right now. All right, we're excited to be joined for the second year in a row, ESPN's Jordan Reed, draft analyst. And Jordan, here we are, Patriots' third overall pick. And, you know, there's a lot of needs, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And I think the easiest place to start is the quarterback position. You know, what do you see from those top guys? Just saw Mel's latest mock draft had sending us that. You know, what do you think Patriots should do there?
Mel always throws us for a loop. He always makes sure to do that. But this quarterback class is really strong, especially at the top. The three names that you're going to hear are Caleb Williams of USC, Drake May of North Carolina, and then Jaden Daniels of LSU. And each one has their own traits that they specialize in. Caleb is more so of your off-script, Patrick Mahomes-esque type of player.
Right, we have to say, like, discount Mahomes.
You have to say, you have to temper expectations with that. But I think Caleb is a very special prospect. But after that, the second quarterback is where the debate really starts, in my opinion. And that's where the draft starts, depending on what Washington does at two.
Yeah.
You have Drake May, who is your prototypical quarterback that's going to receive the Justin Herbert and Josh Allen comparisons. And there's five or six plays a game where Drake May reminds you of why he's worthy of those comparisons. But then there's some other plays of like, man, why couldn't you make this throw after making this 60-yard bomb down the field? So the consistency needs to get better. And then you have Jaden, which is that one quarterback that comes out of nowhere every year that ends up a day three pick, comes out of nowhere, ends up being a top five type of player. So just depends on which type of quarterback that you want, but they're all different in their own right.
Yeah, I want to ask you two things off that, because I agree with you completely that these quarterbacks are all so different. And I feel like that is very scheme specific in a lot of ways. And the Patriots hired Alex Van Pelt from the Cleveland Browns to run their offense. That traditional West Coast bootleg, big play action type of team, that not necessarily either of these quarterbacks, frankly, that were spent a lot of time under center. Now, most college quarterbacks don't, but which one of those two guys between Jaden Daniels and Drake May do you think transitions best into that Alex Van Pelt offense?
That's a good question. I would feel more comfortable about Drake May doing it, just because even though he doesn't have the experience doing it, there is some plays, whether it's from pistol or from shotgun, of where he's still going through the mechanics of doing some under center stuff. Now with Jaden with LSU, it's strictly shotgun.
Yeah.
There isn't any pistol of where he's turning his back to the defense, bootlegging or getting outside of the pocket. But with Drake, it was more so in the Phil Longo offense in 2022 as opposed to with Chip Lindsey last year.
Yeah.
But if you go back and watch him in 2022, he's doing some of the mechanics from pistol, maybe not so from under center, though.
Yeah, and then you just mentioned his 2022 film, and you mentioned with Daniels how he kind of came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. How do you evaluate that when guys – I remember him at Arizona State, and it wasn't quite as pretty as it is now. And now he's throwing to Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, and it's just a lot of talent around him. How do you go from that to here, and do you put any stock in the old tape? I would say, like, Bo Nix is another example of one of those guys, too.
He's one of those guys of where I call it washing your filters or your priors to watching these players, just because whoever you thought they were at that other school they've basically reinvented themselves at these other schools. So whatever you thought of Bo Nix or Jaden Daniels when they were at their prior stops, they're completely different players now. And it's all about development with these quarterbacks. And everybody says, oh, he was throwing to Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. Right. But still, how you measure that is he getting the ball to them accurately?
Yeah.
Or are the receivers having to catch the ball, expand their catch radius? And I didn't see a lot of that on LSU's tape. I thought he was getting the ball in the adequate spaces and adequate ball. He was using adequate ball placement in certain areas to where even though he was throwing to these projected two first-round picks, he still was putting the ball in the right places.
Yeah.
All right, I want to move on to wide receivers. So Patriots
are sitting
at number three.
This
is what we're seeing with Patriot fans. You know, we read your mock drafts. You know, everybody analyzes them. And you can't help but ignore that often Marvin Harrison is just sitting there. You know, and it's a question of how much do the Patriots offense need? They need tackles. They need a quarterback.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at a potential generational wide receiver, is there an argument to be made that don't overthink it, just take the top guy on the board?
Yeah. I think this is the most fascinating debate inside the top five outside of Chicago. Just because we're going to learn a lot about Elliott Wolf, who's obviously in charge of personnel right now. How does he value this quarterback? And how far away does he think this roster is? So there's two ways that they could go with it. Do you trust putting the quarterback in right now and using the $80-plus million in projected cap space that you have and build it up from there? Or do I slide back, or I could take Marvin Harrison Jr., at three, and then look to build it up with future draft capital, or I could trade back to another team that's looking for a quarterback too. So I should say there's three routes that they could go. That's the big debate right now. I don't know what they're going to do.
Boston for sure.
Yeah.
All right, so a couple questions on the receivers. Do you view this as Marvin Harrison Jr. and everybody else? Because I know there are some people that are starting to creep Nabers up, and I think Odunze is one almost underrated at this point.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about tiering those three guys?
So I think Marvin's the best player in the draft.
Yeah.
I think that highly of him. Calvin Johnson, A.J. Green, Julio Jones, Ja'Marr Chase, I think he's in the same tier as those guys as a prospect just because of 6'4", 215 pounds. He's a big receiver that has little receiver movement skills. And what was so impressive to me about Marvin is that Ohio State had subpar quarterback play last year, and he still was able to execute at a high level throughout the season last year. So that shows me that this is an elite of elite talent.
Yeah.
At wide receiver. So I'm a big fan of Marvin, but also not far behind is Nabers and Odunze. So it really just depends on what type of wide receiver that you want at the top of the draft.
Yeah, and then let's go to day two for a second with receivers, because I do think the Patriots personally are going to go quarterback at three.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I'm just saying what I think. And then you start to look at receiver maybe on day two. And I also just looking at the Packer way and how they have typically done it. It's usually a lot of day two receivers. I was down in Mobile, Roman Wilson, Ladd McConkey. Those guys did stand out. But who do you like on day two?
I like quite a bit. I think this is a very strong wide receiver class. We could see as many as six or seven go in the first round. But day two, there's plenty of depth. And you already named some of the good players. But another is Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. He's a little bit raw from a route running aspect. But if you're looking for a Deebo Samuel-esque type of receiver that can create and break tackles after the catch, he's definitely your guy. So I think he had 984 receiving yards last year. 680 came after the catch.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show you how dangerous he is after the catch. So Malachi definitely would be one. More so in the third or fourth round, Ricky Pearsall is another that I like quite a bit. And he was phenomenal down at the Senior Bowl. I thought he was one of the most consistent players regardless of position.
What do you think of Brandon Rice?
I like him. He's a big receiver. The thing about Brendan that's really interesting is that he gets open in his own way.
Yeah.
He's not going to create consistent separation, but he's very competitive at the catch point. And there is some receivers that have been able to cut out a way and be successful in the NFL that way. So he's going to have to make a way of making those competitive catches consistently, just because he's not going to be a consistent separator on the next level.
You talk how deep the wide receiver class is. The tackle class seems just as deep. Patriots have huge needs at both tackle spots.
Mm-hmm.
Again, in a lot of these mock drafts where you take a quarterback or a wide receiver and then you just watch the parade go by and there's like 8-9 tackles that, you know, often are going. What's kind of your philosophy of this class just when you have such a stacked class? Do you strike early and try to get the best one, or do you say, we're going to get a guy and he'll still be pretty good?
Well, once again, it just depends on how they feel about the quarterbacks and the wide receivers in this class. And free agency is going to tell us a ton about the Patriots and how they feel about this class as a whole, just because you're not going to be able to get better and improve every position in the draft. So that's why I said they have a lot of money to spend in free agency. So where they spend those free agency dollars, will have a better feel as far as where they feel is better with this draft class. But offensive tackle is really one of those classes of where you can close your eyes and pick one just because it's so good at the top. And there's some depth through the second and third round as well. Then after that, it does have a little bit of a precipitous fall off. But second or third round, I think there's depth in there too.
Yeah, I feel the same way that it's a really, really good top of the tackle class. Yeah. Probably not as much on day three as some other classes, but two guys I wanted to ask you about. Amarius Mims from Georgia. Yeah. 800 career snaps. I think he's got like seven starts under his belt. How the heck do you evaluate a guy like that? Because it's the talent is so clearly there.
He's one of those dudes. I actually seen Amarius yesterday, 6'7", 340 pounds. So he's just
– I knew he was big.
Yeah, he's an immense tackle. And you stand beside him, you're like, oh, my God, holy cow. This dude is huge. But he's so athletically gifted. And he's expected to do everything that my sources have confirmed. He's expected to do everything. Inside of Lucas Oil Stadium. So I'm excited to see him and just him coming out and competing and understanding that I have an opportunity to potentially be a top 20 pick. So what I need to do is go out and show that my ankle is fully healthy and fully healed now, just because even though my sample size is small, I still can go out and check boxes throughout the pre-draft process. So even though he has the small sample size with 8 career starts in 3 years, I think he has the opportunity to be a big riser.
Is there anybody that you can think of off the top of your head that had that small of a sample size that went on to be a great NFL player?
I actually researched it. I couldn't find anybody that had that limited of a sample size.
Yeah, because a really intriguing player that if he does fall to 34 for the Patriots in the second round, it's a first-round talent that maybe you get on day two.
Yeah.
And with the small sample size, I wonder if teams will view it that way. The other guy, actually just watched him on the plane right here, Kingsley Suamaitai from BYU. I was so impressed by how athletic he is in space for such a big guy.
He's another that's going to be a big tester. Yeah. If I had to guess, he'll probably go somewhere late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
So he's definitely going to be in range for the Patriots if nobody takes him in the back end of the first round. So started his career at Oregon, only played one game there. But the great thing about him is that he has experience on both sides. He's played right tackle. He's played left tackle. He's still a little bit raw, but you're hoping he's one of those players of where you can bundle those athletic traits around his natural gifts, and he just needs reps right now. Once he gets those reps, he has more exposure to the game, he's only going to get better.
Do you have a sleeper at tackle?
So one I actually do like, he'll probably end up going third or fourth round, is Christian Jones of Texas.
I like him too. I saw him in the Senior Bowl, and really good inset of hands, and a lot of those guys, their hand placement and stuff like that's a little raw, and he was impressive.
Yeah, so he started 61 career games, actually played 6 years at Texas, so a lot of experience. Massive human being, 6'5", 320 pounds, but he has really good movement skills. Now, his technique does need to be cleaned up a little bit. He can, what I call, be a little bit of a head ducker sometimes, but that's just him being over-eager at the point of attack. So needs to clean that up a little bit, but you go watch him against Alabama, him and Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell going against each other. It was a fun matchup to watch, and I thought he played really well.
Just last one for me. Outside of tackle, any other sleepers or just position groups you feel like aren't being talked about enough right now, or maybe even a certain guy that you feel like needs a little bit more buzz?
Ooh, that's a great question. Pick a position.
How about wide receiver? No, we already did wide receivers.
Edge defender.
Yeah, there you
go. Ooh, edge rusher. Gabriel Murphy of UCLA. Yeah. I like him quite a bit. He's another that's probably going to be a big tester this week at the combine. He's a little bit undersized, but you're watching Liatu Latu, and you're like, man, who is this dude opposite of him?
Yeah.
And Gabriel Murphy was that player that made a lot of plays.
Yeah, in the USC game, he definitely popped a lot in that game. And just last one for me. Right now, as it stands, maybe February 26th or something like that, who are you picking three overall if you're Elliott Wolf?
So, assuming Drake May is gone, of course, I would take Jaden Daniels. I would take a quarterback, a number three overall, just because nothing matters in a rebuild until you get that position solidified. So, if they take the quarterback there, use the cap room to get offensive tackles, to get receivers, and then just build it up from there.
Yeah.
All right, Jordan Reed from ESPN, thanks so much for joining us. Second year in a row. We'll do it again next year.
No problem. Thank you guys as always.
All right, so great stuff there from Jordan, and we're just getting started here in Indy. It's only Wednesday. Somehow we still have, what, 3-4 days to go? I don't know, but it's only going to get more exciting. And if you remember last year, I mean, we were delirious by Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but that's what we love. We're excited to see all of these guys, and clearly Patriots have a bunch of needs. They've got a new system in place, so it's really exciting to see what kind of players they're going to select this year. And we just, like I said, we got cornerbacks. What, tight ends tomorrow? I mean, what
really,
else?
Really quick, just on the tight ends. Yeah. Really quick.
A little preview.
This is a group that I don't think is as good as last year's by any means. It's not as deep. But there's a couple guys at the top of this draft. I have tried to get Jatavion Sanders from Texas into every single mock draft that I do, some way, shape, or form, because that's the type of player. You look at David Njoku in Cleveland and how Alex Van Pelt was able to unlock him last year in that Browns offense. And Jatavion Sanders reminds me a lot of that explosive, great with the ball in his hands, vertical tight end in the pass game that can hit chunk plays all the time. And you just watch that Texas offense, and yeah, they have A.D. Mitchell. Yeah, they have Xavier Worthy. But Jatavion Sanders really stands out. The other guy that stood out to me in the Senior Bowl is Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. Yeah. Just a really crafty, heady, strong hands, good at the top of the route. Not necessarily the flash that a Jatavion Sanders would bring to the offense, but somebody that I think is going to be really a well-rounded pro, just a solid NFL tight end, and obviously Brock Bowers.
Yeah, we can all dream about Brock Bowers, right?
We can talk about Brock Bowers a little bit, but I think that that's probably not where they're going to go in the first round. But Sanders in that 34 range at the top of the second round, I don't hate it at all.
And maybe a little later, we'd be remiss not to mention TCU's Jared Wiley. You know, that's another option. We love those Horned Frogs. But stay tuned. We'll be here all week with Patriots Draft Countdown presented by Bud Light. And this is just the start of this podcast, so it'll continue once we get back from Indy. We'll continue to break down the draft in depth. So thanks for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow.